course I can see you, Clary said. I'm not blind, you know.
Oh, but you are, said Jace, bending to pick up his knife. You just don't know it.
He straightened up.
You'd better get out of here, if you know what's good for you.
I'm not going anywhere, Clary said. If I do, you'll kill him. She pointed at the boy with the blue hair.
That's true, admitted Jace, twirling the knife between his fingers. What do you care if I kill him or not?
Because, Clary sputtered, you can't just go around killing people.
You're right, said Jace. You can't go around killing people.
He pointed at the boy with blue hair, whose eyes were slitted. Clary wondered if he'd fainted.
That's not a person, little girl. It may look like a person and talk like a person and maybe even bleed like a person, but it's a monster.
Jace, said Isabel warningly, that's enough. You're crazy, Clary said, backing away from him. I've called the police, you know. They'll be here any second.
She's lying, said Alec, but there was doubt on his face.
Jace, do you... He never got to finish his sentence. At that moment, the blue-haired boy, with a high, yowling cry, tore free of the restraints binding him to the pillar and flung himself on Jace. They fell to the ground and rolled together, the blue-haired boy tearing at Jace with hands that glittered as if tipped with metal. Clary backed up, wanting to run, but her feet caught on a loop of wiring and she went down, knocking the breath out of her chest. She could hear Isabel shrieking. Rolling over, Clary saw the blue-haired boy sitting on Jace's chest. Blood gleamed at the tips of his razor-like claws. Isabel and Alec were running toward them, Isabel brandishing a whip in her hand. The blue-haired boy slashed at Jace with claws extended. Jace threw an arm up to protect himself, and the claws raked it, splattering blood. The blue-haired boy lunged again, and Isabel's whip came down across his back. He shrieked and fell to the side. Swift as a flick of Isabel's whip, Jace rolled over. There was a blade gleaming in his hand. He sank the knife into the blue-haired boy's chest. Blackish liquid exploded around the hilt. The boy arched off the floor, gurgling and twisting. With a grimace, Jace stood up. His black shirt was blacker now in some places, wet with blood. He looked down at the twitching form at his feet, reached down and yanked out the knife. The hilt was slick with black fluid. The blue-haired boy's eyes flickered open. His eyes, fixed on Jace, seemed to burn. Between his teeth, he hissed, "So be it! The Forsaken will take you all!" Jace seemed to snarl. The boy's eyes rolled back. His body began to jerk and twitch as he crumpled, folding in on himself, growing smaller and smaller until he vanished entirely. Clary scrambled to her feet, kicking free of the electrical wiring. She began to back away. None of them was paying attention to her. Alec had reached Jace and was holding his arm, pulling at the sleeve, probably trying to get a good look at the wound. Clary turned to run and found her way blocked by Isabel, whip in hand. The gold length of it was stained with dark fluid. She flicked it toward Clary, and the end wrapped itself around her wrist and jerked tight. Clary gasped with pain and surprise. "Stupid little Mundy," Isabel said between her teeth. "You could have gotten Jace killed." "He's crazy," Clary said, trying to pull her wrist back. The whip bit deeper into her skin. "You're all crazy. What do you think you are, vigilante killers? The police..."
"The police aren't usually interested unless you can produce a body," said Jace.
Cradling his arm, he picked his way across the cable-strewn floor toward Clary. Alec followed behind him, face screwed into a scowl. Clary glanced at the spot where the boy had disappeared from and said nothing. There wasn't even a smear of blood there. Nothing to show that the boy had ever existed.
"They return to their home dimensions when they die," said Jace, "in case you were wondering."
"Jace," Alec hissed, "be careful." Jace drew his arm away. A ghoulish freckling of blood marked his face. He still reminded her of a lion, with his wide-spaced, light-colored eyes and that tawny gold hair.
"She can see us, Alec," he said. "She already knows too much."
"So what do you want me to do with her?" Isabel demanded.
"Let her go," Jace said quietly.
Isabel shot him a surprised, almost angry look, but didn't argue. The whip slithered away, freeing Clary's arm. She rubbed her sore wrist and wondered how the hell she was going to get out of there.
"Maybe we should bring her back with us," Alec said. "I bet Hodge would like to talk to her."
"No way are we bringing her to the Institute," said Isabel. "She's a Mundy."
"Or is she?" said Jace softly.
His quiet tone was worse than Isabel's snapping or Alec's anger.
Have you had dealings with demons, little girl? Walked with warlocks? Talked with the night children? Have you...
My name is not Little Girl, Clary interrupted, and I have no idea what you're talking about.
Don't you? Said a voice in the back of her head. You saw that boy vanish into thin air. Jace isn't crazy. You just wish he was.
I don't believe in demons or whatever you... Clary?
It was Simon's voice. She whirled around. He was standing by the storage room door. One of the burly bouncers who'd been stamping hands at the front door was next to him.
Are you okay?
He peered at her through the gloom.
Why are you in here by yourself? What happened to the guys? You know, the ones with the knives?
Clary stared at him, then looked behind her, where Jace, Isabel, and Alex stood, Jace still in his bloody shirt with the knife in his hand. He grinned at her and dropped a half-apologetic, half-mocking shrug. Clearly, he wasn't surprised that neither Simon nor the bouncer could see them. Somehow, neither was Clary. Slowly, she turned back to Simon, knowing how she must look to him, standing alone in a damp storage room, her feet tangled in bright plastic wiring cables.
I thought they went in here, she said lamely, but I guess they didn't. I'm sorry.
She glanced from Simon, whose expression was changing from worried to embarrassed, to the bouncer, who just looked annoyed.
It was a mistake.
Behind her, Isabel giggled.
I don't believe it, Simon said stubbornly as Clary, standing at the curb, tried desperately to hail a cab.
Street cleaners had come down Orchard while they were inside the club, and the street was glossed black with oily water.
I know, she agreed. You think there'd be some cabs. Where's everyone going at midnight on a Sunday?
She turned back to him, shrugging.
You think we'd have better luck on Houston?
Not the cabs, Simon said.
You. I don't believe you. I don't believe those guys with the knives just disappeared.
Clary sighed.
Maybe there weren't any guys with knives, Simon. Maybe I just imagined the whole thing.
No way.
Simon raised his hand over his head, but the oncoming taxis whizzed by him, spraying dirty water.
I saw your face when I came into that storage room. You looked seriously freaked out, like you'd seen a ghost.
Clary thought of Jace with his lion cat eyes. She glanced down at her wrist, braceleted by a thin red line where Isabel's whip had curled.
No, not a ghost, she thought. Something even weirder than that.
It was just a mistake, she said wearily. She wondered why she wasn't telling him the truth. Except, of course, that he'd think she was crazy. And there was something about what had happened, something about the black blood bubbling up around Jace's knife, something about his voice when he'd said, "Have you talked with the night children?" that she wanted to keep to herself.
Well, it was a hell of an embarrassing mistake, Simon said.
He glanced back at the club, where a thin line still snaked out the door and halfway down the block.
I doubt they'll ever let us back into Pandemonium.
What do you care? You hate Pandemonium.
Clary raised her hand again as a yellow shape sped toward them through the fog. This time, though, the taxi screeched to a halt at their corner, the driver laying into his horn as if he needed to get their attention.
Finally, we get lucky.
Simon yanked the taxi door open and slid onto the plastic-covered back seat. Clary followed, inhaling the familiar New York cab smell of old cigarette smoke, leather, and hairspray.
We're going to Brooklyn, Simon said to the cabbie, and then he turned to Clary.
Look, you know you can tell me anything, right?
Clary hesitated a moment, then nodded.
Sure, Simon, she said. I know I can.
She slammed the cab door shut behind her, and the taxi took off into the night.
Chapter 2. Secrets and Lies.
The Dark Prince sat astride his black steed, his sable cape flowing behind him. A golden circlet bound his blonde locks, his handsome face was cold with the rage of battle, and...
And his arm looked like an eggplant, Clary muttered to herself in exasperation.
The drawing just wasn't working. With a sigh, she tore yet another sheet from her sketch pad, crumpled it up, and tossed it against the orange wall of her bedroom. Already the floor was littered with discarded balls of paper, a sure sign that her creative juices weren't flowing the way she'd hoped. She wished for the thousandth time that she could be a bit more like her mother. Everything Jocelyn Frey drew, painted, or sketched was beautiful, and seemingly effortless. Clary pulled her headphones out, cutting off Stepping Razor in mid-song, and rubbed her aching temples.
It was only then that she became aware that the loud, piercing sound of a ringing telephone was echoing through the apartment. Tossing the sketchpad onto the bed, she jumped to her feet and ran into the living room, where the retro red phone sat on a table near the front door.
"Is this Clarissa Frey?"
The voice on the other end of the phone sounded familiar, though not immediately identifiable. Clary twirled the phone cord nervously around her finger.
"Yes?"
"Hi, I'm one of the knife-carrying hooligans you met last night in Pandemonium. I'm afraid I made a bad impression and was hoping you'd give me a chance to make it up."
"Simon!"
Clary held the phone away from her ear as he cracked up laughing.
"That is so not funny."
"Sure it is. You just don't see the humor."
"Jerk."
Clary sighed, leaning up against the wall.
"You wouldn't be laughing if you'd been here when I got home last night."
"Why not?"
"My mom. She wasn't happy that we were late. She freaked out. It was messy."
"What? It's not our fault there was traffic," Simon protested.
He was the youngest of two children and had a finely honed sense of familial injustice.
"Yeah, well, she doesn't see it that way. I disappointed her, I let her down, I made her worry, blah, blah, blah."
"I am the bane of her existence," Clary said, mimicking her mother's precise phrasing with only a slight twinge of guilt.
So are you grounded?" Simon asked a little too loudly.
Clary could hear a low rumble of voices behind him, people talking over each other.
"I don't know yet," she said. "My mom went out this morning with Luke, and they're not back yet.
Where are you, anyway? Eric's?"
"Yeah, we just finished up practice."
A cymbal clashed behind Simon. Clary winced.
"Eric's doing a poetry reading over at Java Jones tonight," Simon went on, naming a coffee shop around the corner from Clary's that sometimes had live music at night. "The whole band's going to go to show their support. Want to come?"
"Yeah, all right."
Clary paused, tugging on the phone cord anxiously.
"Wait, no."
"Shut up, guys, will you?"
Simon yelled, the faintness of his voice making Clary suspect that he was holding the phone away from his mouth. He was back a second later, sounding troubled. "Was that a yes or a no?"
"I don't know," Clary bit her lip. "My mom's still mad at me about last night. I'm not sure I want to piss her off by asking for any favors. If I'm gonna get in trouble, I don't want it to be on account of Eric's lousy poetry."
"Come on, it's not so bad," Simon said. Eric was his next-door neighbor, and the two had known each other most of their lives. They weren't close the way Simon and Clary were, but they had formed a rock band together at the start of sophomore year, along with Eric's friends Matt and Kirk. They practiced together faithfully in Eric's parents' garage every week.
"Besides, it's not a favor," Simon added. "It's a poetry slam around the block from your house. It's not like I'm inviting you to some orgy in Hoboken. Your mom can come along if she wants."
"Orgy in Hoboken!" Clary heard someone, probably Eric, yell.
Another cymbal crashed. She imagined her mother listening to Eric read his poetry, and she shuddered inwardly.
"I don't know. If all of you show up here, I think she'll freak."
"Then I'll come alone. I'll pick you up and we can walk over there together. Meet the rest of them there. Your mom won't mind. She loves me."
Clary had to laugh. Sign of her questionable taste, if you ask me.
Nobody did.
Simon clicked off amid shouts from his bandmates. Clary hung up the phone and glanced around the living room. Evidence of her mother's artistic tendencies was everywhere, from the handmade velvet throw pillows piled on the dark red sofa to the walls hung with Jocelyn's paintings, carefully framed. Landscapes mostly, the winding streets of downtown Manhattan lit with golden light, scenes of Prospect Park in winter, the gray ponds edged with lace-like films of white ice. On the mantel over the fireplace was a framed photo of Clary's father, a thoughtful-looking fair man in military dress. His eyes bore the telltale traces of laugh lines at the corners. He'd been a decorated soldier serving overseas. Jocelyn had some of his medals in a small box by her bed. Not that the medals had done anyone any good when Jonathan Clark had crashed his car into a tree just outside Albany and died before his daughter was even born. Jocelyn had gone back to using her maiden name after he died. She never talked about Clary's father, but she kept the box engraved with his initials, J.C., next to her bed. Along with the medals were one or two photos, a wedding ring, and a single lock of blonde hair. Sometimes Jocelyn took the box out and opened it, and held the lock of hair very gently in her hands before putting it back and carefully locking the box up again. The sound of the key turning in the front door roused Clary out of her reverie.
Hastily, she threw herself down on the couch and tried to look as if she were immersed in one of the paperbacks her mother had left stacked on the end table. Jocelyn recognized reading as a sacred pastime and usually wouldn't interrupt Clary in the middle of a book, even to yell at her. The door opened with a thump. It was Luke, his arms full of what looked like big square pieces of pasteboard. When he set them down, Clary saw that they were cardboard boxes folded flat. He straightened up and turned to her with a smile.
Hey, Luke, she said.
He'd asked her to stop calling him Uncle Luke about a year ago, claiming that it made him feel old, and anyway reminded him of Uncle Tom's cabin. Besides, he'd reminded her gently, he wasn't really her uncle, just a close friend of her mother's who'd known her all her life. Where's Mom?
Parking the truck, he said, straightening his lanky frame with a groan.
He was dressed in his usual uniform, old jeans, a flannel shirt, and a bent pair of gold-rimmed spectacles that sat askew on the bridge of his nose.
Remind me again why this building has no service elevator.
Because it's old and has character, Clary said immediately. Luke grinned. What are the boxes for? She asked. His grin vanished.
Your mother wanted to pack up some things, he said, avoiding her gaze.
What things? Clary asked. He gave an airy wave.
Extra stuff lying around the house. Getting in the way. You know she never throws anything out. So, what are you up to? Studying?
He plucked the book out of her hand and read out loud.
The world still teems with those motley beings whom a more sober philosophy has discarded. Fairies and goblins, ghosts and demons still hover about.
He lowered the book and looked at her over his glasses.
Is this for school?
The Golden Bough?
No,
school's not for 2 weeks. Clary took the book back from him. It's my mom's.
I had a feeling.
She dropped it back on the table. Luke?
Uh-huh.
The book already forgotten, he was rummaging in the toolkit next to the hearth.
Bah, here it is.
He pulled out an orange plastic tape gun and gazed at it with deep satisfaction. What would you do if you saw something nobody else could see? The tape gun fell out of Luke's hand and hit the tiled hearth. He knelt to pick it up, not looking at her.
You mean if I were the only witness to a crime, that sort of thing?
No, I mean, if there were other people around, but you were the only one who could see something. As if it were invisible to everyone but you. He hesitated, still kneeling, the dented tape gun gripped in his hand. I know it sounds crazy, Clary ventured nervously. But... He turned around, his eyes, very blue behind the glasses, rested on her with a look of firm affection.
Clary, you're an artist like your mother. That means you see the world in ways that other people don't. It's your gift, to see the beauty and the horror in ordinary things. It doesn't make you crazy, just different. There's nothing wrong with being different.
Clary pulled her legs up and rested her chin on her knees. In her mind's eye, she saw the storage room, Isabel's gold whip, the blue-haired boy convulsing in his death spasms, and Jace's tawny eyes, beauty and horror. She said, If my dad had lived, do you think he'd have been an artist too? Luke looked taken aback. Before he could answer her, the door swung open and Clary's mother stalked into the room, her boot heels clacking on the polished wooden floor. She handed Luke a set of jingling car keys and turned to look at her daughter. Jocelyn Frey was a slim, compact woman, her hair a few shades darker than Clary's and twice as long. At the moment, it was twisted up in a dark red knot, stuck through with a graphite pen to hold it in place. She wore paint-spattered overalls over a lavender t-shirt, and brown hiking boots whose soles were caked with oil paint. People always told Clary that she looked like her mother, but she couldn't see it herself. The only thing that was similar about them was their figures. They were both slender, with small chests and narrow hips. She knew she wasn't beautiful like her mother was. To be beautiful, you had to be willowy and tall. When you were as short as Clary was, just over 5 feet, you were cute. Not pretty or beautiful, but cute. Throw in carroty hair and a face full of freckles, and she was a Raggedy Ann to her mother's Barbie doll. Jocelyn even had a graceful way of walking that made people turn their heads to watch her go by. Clary, by contrast, was always tripping over her feet. The only time people turned to watch her go by was when she hurtled past them as she fell downstairs.
Thanks for bringing the boxes up, Clary's mother said to Luke, and smiled at him. He didn't return the smile. Clary's stomach did an uneasy flip. Clearly there was something going on.